بشرع التدسق عنده ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويا بشار ويا كذاب وتضرب انت وهالخطاب الحريه صارخ على الباب ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويا بشار ويا كذاب وتضرب انت وهالخطاب الحريه.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Asher Kaufman, who's a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace and headed its Middle East unit from 2004 to 2005. Asher Kaufman is the author of Reviving Phoenicia, The Search for Identity in Lebanon, and his forthcoming book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region. Welcome to Background Briefing, Asher Kaufman.
Thank you for having me.
And there is this, of course, impending American strike on Syria, subject to congressional approval, which indications are that it probably will come, although there'll be an opposition, unusual coalitions of doves on the Democratic side and libertarians on the Republican side against it, and the interventionist Democrats and the neoconservatives on the Republican side for it. But I imagine, well, let's start with that. I imagine the president will get the vote, right? It'll right. probably be close, but he'll get it.
Yes, that seems to be the case. This is the message that we just got now from the Senate, the Congress, the Committee on Foreign Relations, that have voted in favor.
So, obviously, this is a political strike, not a military strike. I mean, it's a military strike, but it has political purposes as opposed to military objectives. Would you agree?
Yes, I fully agree. I mean, the purpose is primarily political, and all the talks about normative considerations, which are in their place. There are clear normative questions here that have to be addressed. I think they are superseded by the political considerations that come behind this this strike. We should be guided by the normative issues, but we should have been guided by it, for the last 2.5 years. 100,000 people died in Syria before chemical weapons were overtly or exposed to be used, as we have discovered recently. But nobody in the United States really openly spoke about intervention. And now with these very unfortunate 1,400 deaths, we, many in America and in the international community, seem to think that their death is somehow different from the death of the 100,000 that died before them.
Well, given that moral inconsistency that we have refused to do anything about the 100,000 killed by conventional weapons, and now we're prepared to do something because 1,500 people were killed by chemical weapons, I imagine the issue here is crossing the line and the use of WMD, which, unfortunately, so much of this debate is clouded by the legacy of Bush and Cheney and the lies to get into that war based on WMD. I mean, it's extraordinary how much the ghost of George W. Bush haunts this whole episode.
Yes, absolutely. This is why Obama needs to be more forthcoming about evidence, about proof, and needs to tell us as much as possible about the evidence. And, I mean, it would be futile now to go to the UN and have a public display as Colin Powell had back in 2003. What needs to happen now is to go with this evidence to Moscow and to get them, the Russians, on board. And I would even say go to Iran and reach out to Iran and get the Iranians as much as possible on board. There is a new president, a new spirit. He has just wished a Happy New Year to the Jewish people. This did not happen with the previous president. So, not that this is an indication of a change of foreign policy coming from Iran, but still, Iran is a major player when it comes to the fate of Syria, and this is one of it's one of the players that the United States have to take into account in these deliberations.
And in terms of Israel, Israel's been pretty silent on this, haven't they?
I mean, officially silent, but we have heard calls from actually senior members of the government pushing Obama to demonstrate more resolve and strength and finally strike Syria. Even Victor Lieberman made some references to the normative elements that have to be addressed. And just like in other parts of the world, in Israel as well, it's more political than anything else. And talking about normative issues is clearly, I mean, from the Israeli perspective, has very little to do with the real considerations or real concern with the normative issues that the Syria quagmire brings to the fore. It has to do with other issues. But formally, as at least the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, has been, the policy that he has been leading is Israel remains silent and does not officially respond to this escalating situation with an impending American strike.
Again, I'm speaking with Asher Kaufman, who's a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University in Jerusalem and was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace, heading up its Middle East unit. And his forthcoming book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel-Tri-Border Region. And, of course, the reason that Syria has chemical weapons and has a substantial arsenal is because it's what I guess it's a kind of poor man's nuke. The Israelis have got nuclear weapons, and this is their means to have some deterrence, I imagine, given that they supposedly, at least according to French intelligence, have several hundreds of tons of sulfur mustard, tens of tons of VX, and several hundreds of tons of sarin. This is also, I think, given their use of it, which has been going on for months apparently, the Israelis presented the White House with evidence some time back, which the U.S. downplayed. What's your sense of whether or not there'll be more chemical weapons used as opposed to less because of an American strike?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question. What would happen the second after a strike takes place in Syria? Would they use chemical weapons more? My suspicion is that an American strike, a limited American strike, would not be able to eliminate Syrian chemical capabilities, and the Syrian regime, or it's not clear if it would be the regime itself or units that support the regime but are not controlled by the regime, that they would self-initiate the use of chemical weapons. It's a very, very murky future that awaits us. And this is one of the major concerns of this strike, at least from my perspective. I'm thinking about what would happen the day after, or, you know, even the moment after the strike, an American strike takes place. Would it reduce violence? Would it increase it? And my hunch is that it would increase violence and not won't reduce it. That's my major concern. This is why I'm so strongly in support of, before any strike whatsoever, there has to be some talks involving the United States, Russia, and also Iran. Without that, we may well end up with further violence after such a strike. And the Syrians have had these weapons, just like you said. This is the poor man's weapon of, the alternative to nuclear weapons. What is interesting, obviously, is that Israel has allowed all these years Syria to accumulate chemical weapons. And Israel had, according to you know, international reports, Israel struck twice against Syrian nuclear facilities that were in the making. But for, I don't know how many years, 30, 40 years of accumulating chemical weapons, Israel has not lifted a finger against that, which is another interesting point to consider, that when one accumulates so much chemical weapons, one would think that, you know, they are there to, that there would be a day that they may be used, and this is what we are seeing seeing now. I mean, the issue of holding, obtaining and using chemical weapons are grave, and they pose major normative questions. But we have already, you know, we've already seen the United States in the 1980s saying nothing about Iraq's use of chemical weapons, because Iraq was then the darling of the United States. And so as much as I would like to think that the world operates, should operate according to these normative values, it is clear that the states, leadership, they have other considerations to their actions.
So, Asher Kaufman, you mentioned earlier that you thought the U.S., before they pull the trigger, they should be talking to Russia and to Iran. Of course, talking to Iran would be highly unlikely, even if there is an opening with a new leader there. Talking with Russia, though, of course, is going to happen in any case on Thursday and Friday. The G20 is taking place in, it's already underway, but the President Obama will be there in St. Petersburg. Now, he canceled the meeting after that, after the G20 with Putin over the Edward Snowden affair, which, in contrast to the crisis over Syria's WMD, you'd think that some adult supervision might be required here. You know, these people had better forget about their problems they have with each other and deal with a far more serious question.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, I'm sure that there is something that Russia would like to get from the United States, and I'm sure that bringing Russia on board, you know, doing something against Syria's use of chemical weapons would cost the United States some capital, some concession. But this is, you know, this is the art of politics and the art of diplomacy. It will not come for free for the United States to get Russian support, but this is inevitable. If you want to make any constructive progress with regards to Syria, you have to get the Russians aboard. And I would disagree with you that the door is closed behind Iran. I mean, the Iranian regime is, you know, it's a rational player that has its own interest, its own, they are thinking about their own interest in this affair, and it is possible, I think, to reach out to them and to try to get their consent that indeed chemical weapons is, you know, it's unacceptable, that this is a red line, and that Iran has to be supportive of that red line. And also there would have to be some concessions made, but this is a time to speak before you make any military move. And the only viable entities that you could speak with that could actually have make a difference are Russia and Iran.
Well, I was suggesting that talking with Iran is highly unlikely. It's not. I wasn't suggesting it's not a good idea. I think it is a good idea. And unfortunately, the U.S. is trapped, as it always is, in dealing with these so-called rogue states, is they think that talking to somebody is a reward. And they construct situations with sanctions and et cetera, where you would, in effect, lose face if you did talk, and all of this pressure they put on Iran over its nuclear program would be out the window. At least that's the thinking inside the White House, that to talk to Iran would be tantamount to rewarding them for bad behavior. And that, unfortunately, applies to all of these states, you know, Syria and North Korea. That's the mechanism that we operate by, and it's really counterproductive and I think counterintuitive.
Yes. No, I agree with you. This is the challenge of dealing with countries like Iran and North Korea. But again, if the purpose is dealing with Syria, then the key lies, you know, in very particular places in the world. And this, there are back channels, diplomacy, America doesn't have to, you know, you initiate the talks and see where it leads you. And who knows with this new president what, you know, how things could evolve.
Well, since, Asher Kaplan, since you've specialized in cartography and contested frontiers in the very region that we're talking about, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, and the tri-border region, there's an assumption that the end of this agony will probably result in a petitioned Syria with the Alawites moving up onto the northwestern coast of Syria around Lakatia and the mountainous areas there, and the rest will be sort of Sunni controlled, and that at the end of the day, because of the, in fact, that it may be the chemical weapons arsenal that will guarantee them some territory as opposed to being overrun and slaughtered, if indeed we were to arm the other side sufficiently to overrun them. It would seem that at some point or other, you have to call for a ceasefire and work out these cartographical arrangements, given that all of the cartography in that part of the world was put together by the French and the British.
Yeah, but I'm skeptical of these scenarios because, you know, Africa has been partitioned in a very similar way. Most of the colonial world was divided, you know, in offices, colonial offices in London and Paris. And these boundaries, all in all over the world, has remained intact with very, very few changes. If you look at the Lebanese civil war, during the heyday of the civil war, everybody was talking about you know, the Balkanization or cantonization of Lebanon. That eventually did not happen. And I think we are heading for a very long civil war in Syria. I am not sure it would conclude with the disintegration of Syria. Additionally, the scenario of having the Alawites retreat to the mountain and establishing you know, a sort of an independent entity there is very, very difficult to imagine, for the simple fact that this is the only access of Syria to the Mediterranean. Without the Alawite region and the coast west of it, Syria has no access to the Mediterranean. No regime in Damascus or whatever would allow that to happen, to lose the access to the Mediterranean. Latakia is the one and only port city of Syria, and it's on the other side of the mountains, and it's predominantly Sunni with strong Alawi presence. But I cannot envision any regime that would rise after this civil war in Damascus that would give up access to the Mediterranean. It would turn Syria into a landlocked country. And so whatever scenario of Alawis retreating to the mountain and establishing a stronghold there is very challenging, for the very simple fact that I cannot think of that happening without a major challenge because of the issue of access to the Mediterranean.
Well, just in closing then, Asher Kaplan, the alternative is that these people who clearly hate each other and have been murdering each other in the most savage way, they've just got to find a way to start to talk to each other and make some kind of a deal to hold that country together. I mean,
it's not the first civil war that we have experienced in the last 200, 300 years. Civil wars have happened elsewhere, and they eventually run out their course, and there is an agreement, and then people start licking their wounds and trying to think about reconstruction and reconciliation. And it's very far, difficult to think about it now, but this is the only way out for Syria in the future.
Well, Asher Kaplan, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Asher Kaplan, who's a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace, where he headed up its Middle East unit. He's the author of Reviving Phoenicia, The Search for Identity in Lebanon, and his forthcoming book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region. And we're going to take a brief station break and come back talking about the shadow of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney hanging over the impending Syrian intervention.
اكتب واخط بالقلم بالقلم اكتب واخط بالقلم دموع من عيني دموع من عيني يا ناس مالي حدا يا ناس مالي حدا بهمي واسيني